Thanks for listening to this Word in Your Ear podcast. If you'd like to get early access to all our productions ad-free, priority booking for our live events, and to take part in our weekly quiz, go to patreon.com/wordinyourear for more details.
You're listening to a podcast from The Word.
The Stat-Waddy game, I'm going first.
Cool.
And we're going to go back to the early 60s.
To the
United States of America. Probably it's more specifically the East Coast of the United States of America.
Yep.
Because we're talking about the leading lights of what it was known as the folk revival.
Okay. Yeah.
That era that is affectionately lampooned in that wonderful Christopher Guest film, A Mighty Wind.
A Mighty Wind. Brilliant
which we
film.
Heartily recommend to people.
Yeah, yeah. It's
okay.
Fantastic.
So these are five names of folk singing aggregations of that era and that geographical location. One of them, one of the five, is entirely invented by me. Okay.
Go on.
Here we go. The Folk Singers.
That's a great name.
The Freedom Singers.
Yep.
The Highwaymen. The Rooftop Singers. And the Brothers Four. The Folk Singers. The Freedom Singers. The Highwaymen. The Rooftop Singers. And the Brothers Four. Which of those is entirely my imagination?
Wow. That's very good. The Folk Singers is such a prosaic name that it must be true. It's like calling a group the Pop Group. What's a group called the Pop Group?
There was a group called the Pop Group.
Yeah, so what we're talking about. So that, I think, is real. Freedom Singers is trying quite hard to be a little bit political, so I think that's probably real too. Rooftop Singers, possibly. That's more of a soul thing, isn't it? But I think that might work. Brothers Four, definitely. That's the kind of funky fraternity that you'd expect. But I think, for some reason, that it's the Highwaymen.
You think the Highwaymen?
I think that's made up. But well,
you've walked into my trap.
Go on.
The Highwaymen were real. They were all real, apart from the Folk Singers.
Oh, no, that's fantastic.
I went through long lists, and there are millions of them called the Something Singers. And the Rooftop Singers, of course, had a hit record in Britain with Walk Right In, Sit Right Down, Daddy Let Your Mind Roll On.
Oh, yeah, it's a great record.
Wasn't Roger McGuinn very early on? Wasn't he a member of the Rooftop Singers? They were one of those. I think there were millions of members of the Rooftop Singers that used to feature on TV programs. Anyway, the one I made up were the Folk Singers.
That's brilliant because it's so kind of crap that you think it must be real.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Very good. Well, good work from you. You have me.
Over to you.
All right. Okay. Five rock stars' autobiographies. Okay. Mostly with puntastic titles.
That's a good idea.
Five rock stars. Good idea. Okay, one of them invented by me. Spot the ringer. Okay, number one is Peter Tork's Monkey Business. Number two is David Van Day's Another Day, Another Dollar. All right. Number three is Pat Benatar's Between a Heart and a Rock Place.
This is a brilliant.
Number four, you like it? I'm good.
That's very
number
good.
Four is Gene Simmons' Kiss and Make Up. That's great. And number five is John Otway's autobiography, I Did It Otway. So you've got Peter Tork's Monkey Business.
Those are brilliant. All five of them are absolutely fantastic.
Another day, another dollar.
You missed your vocation, which should have been making up titles of rock autobiographies for publishers, because all of those are better than lots of the ones that got onto the shelves.
I love that kind of whole tradition of tortuous puns. Do you remember Alan Hansen had a book out called Tall, Dark and Hansen? It's just, it writes itself, doesn't it?
Footballers are a different...
Has to be done.
Yeah. But anyway, I have to say, I haven't heard of any of those five. So I'm going to just have to actually plump for just one. I don't believe David Van Day even wrote an autobiography.
He did. But isn't it genius? Another day, another dollar. I mean, all bases covered. No, he did. That's real. And so is Pat Benatar's Between a Heart and a Rock Place, which is actually, I think, the title of a song that she had once. Kiss and Makeup is real. I mean, that's a genius title.
It had to be.
Yeah, that's it. And I Did It Otway is also real. Although it could have just as easily been Call Baby, That's Really Me.
Yes, I would have thought so.
Now, the one I made up was Monkey Business by Peter Tork.
I did wonder about that. There was a book. It was Monkey Business.
It's Monkey Business. That's right. Yeah. Sorry, I should have pronounced that. Yeah. But there was a book by Davy Jones, although he didn't write it. There was a book, a memoir. After it came out after he died, so it was a memoir rather than autobiography called "They Made a Monkey Out of Me" by Davy Jones. Yeah, yeah. But so I win. That rare occasion, I actually win.
Well, I think we both win.
You win your round, and I win mine.
Moving on. Yesterday was, introduce a personal note, our wedding anniversary.
I remember.
And last year was a very significant one, so we had a bit of a party, but this one was just me and the missus went out for a meal. And anyway, I was reminded of the day we got married many years ago, going between the register office and the reception, just walking up Lewis High Street in Sussex. And once a magazine person, always a magazine person. You're supposed to be, entirely involved in the fact that it's your wedding day and so forth. But you'll sympathise with it. I was distracted momentarily by looking at a shop window. And look, the new issue of Smash Hits is
in. You're going to see, rushed off and bought a copy of Melody, mate.
No, I don't.
The new issue is, mate. You've told me this before. Smash Hits. It's the one with, it's September 79. It's got the specials on the cover.
It's got the specials on the cover.
Yeah, I've got a copy.
I'm just looking at it now. It's got inside in its, in its contents, it's got Bouffant Boogie. Which is a piece where David Hepworth flips his wig for the B-52s.
I've read it. It's fantastic. Can I just say, you write the whole issue?
I probably do,
I think you've written. Yeah, you've written the whole thing. Because there's the thing about the flannel panel.
Yes.
There's the thing about the flannel panel where you say something like, rush down to the newsagents and reserve your copy of Smash Hits. Why are you still here? Yeah, move it. Like it's got your kind of style to it. And then there's the thing about the B-52s, which, as you say, which is brilliant. And it's got, you talking about their wigs. And also the fact they have no conventional bass guitar. You've got a B.A. Robertson. You write all the news stories. I can tell it's you. B.A. Robertson took 5 years to become an overnight sensation. there's the thing about Cliff Richard. Life begins at 39 for Cliff Richard. He may not be everyone's cup of Ovaltine, but he's got more hair than Howard Devoto. Isn't that great? Then you, as I say, there's B-52s. Then you interview the Jam, which is great. There's a bit where you said, I switched off my tape recorder while they discussed Tubeway Army. Paul Weller says, I like all the new bands except that electronic lot, which is brilliant. So he doesn't like anybody with a synthesizer. Then you interview the specials, and then you write a piece about Eddie Cochran.
I know.
The entire issue is written by you. You wrote a piece about Eddie Cochran, which I think is very special. Also, clearly, you've written the quiz. Because the quiz has questions that allude to the Marquis de Sade, John Coltrane, and Salvador Dali. I'm thinking, that is A, very Hepworth, and B, very Smash Hits. Because Smash Hits really used to kind of pitch beyond the brief, didn't it?
John
Coltrane is mentioned in there. Salvador Dali, Marquis de Sade. Isn't that fantastic?
That's brilliant.
I love it.
When I picked it out, I never realised that was the case, that I'd written so much of it. Because all I'm going by is I can remember so clearly seeing that cover in the newsagent's window. Yeah. Thinking, that's a good cover. It's a really great cover. But that must have been before you joined, if I was
it's
right.
It's before I joined. Actually, there's another piece you've written, which is about madness, where you're introducing people to madness and telling them who they are.
Their name comes from
a Prince Buster song. They're from North London, and they're very exciting. And you've all been doing the nutty dance in the office, which might be a slight exaggeration. So, yeah,
yes,
incredible.
It might be. No,
but before my time.
Good grief. So, I just thought... of course, nowadays you can find all of those things on the internet, can't you? Which is where we found them.
Where we found it. Yeah, that's right.
The Word Podcast prime cuts of popular culture served fresh each week.
So I was reading somewhere the other day that Steve Jones of the Sex Pistols is 65.
Oh, well.
He's an old age pensioner. And weirdly, I didn't find that remotely shocking or troublesome. And I don't really know why that is. Is that something to do with punk rock? Is it that punk rock was not forged in the white heat of impeccable good looks and youth? And, you know, I don't know. So it just doesn't matter to me that your punk rockers are getting older.
No, I suppose it doesn't matter to me at all. I mean, it hasn't mattered to me for years because I remember Mick Jagger. I'm old enough to remember Mick Jagger in his, probably when he was about 30, saying, I can't imagine doing this when I'm 40.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, that's 40 years ago, more than 40 years ago.
The physical thing, wasn't it? He never thought he'd be fit enough to be able to kind of run around long stages.
Also, I think they also probably thought that their kind of earning potential and so forth and the interest in them would decline. Anything but. It's oddly enough increased, you know, as we frequently remark on this podcast, it's the only job in the world where they seem to get more appealing. And more wealth the older they get, you know. It doesn't apply to anything else at all as far as I can work out. But it's, you know, it's always interesting to reflect on the strange anomalies of pop star ages, which sent me looking for and strange things like Donny Osmond, Toya, and Madonna are all the same age. Do you know what that age is?
I think Is he 62?
It's 62.
But Michael Jackson will be 62 because he's born almost exactly the same day, the same year as though, wasn't he?
So okay. So, and I think that's really interesting because Donny Osmond, 62, was very famous in, 1972? Something
exactly.
Like
that. Yeah.
Toya was very famous in, 1980? When was It's a Mystery?
So, 80, 81 is around then, wasn't it? Yeah.
Okay. And Madonna starts being really famous in, the mid-80s. Now, you know what I mean? That people come in at various different stages, don't they? But they are, but they still have the same kind of biological age, you know. They're the career age.
Yeah.
Seems wildly different. Of course, we had our quiz, our regular quiz on Friday evening. For Patreon supporters, and the solution to that quiz involved in reference to Ian Hunter, and who of course Ian Hunter is
who was ancient, wasn't he? When he started, we all knew he was pretty ancient, but he's older than the Stones, isn't he?
He's
Was he born during the Second World War? No, my.
He's born before the first.
Before
I was about to say
the first World War. Yeah. He was.
He was born when the Archduke Franz Ferdinand was still alive. No, he was born 3 months before the German invasion of Poland. Yeah. So he was born in, you know, kind of summer or whenever, summer 1939.
Yeah.
That, which probably doesn't make him older than Bill Wyman. Bill Wyman has probably just slightly got the edge on it. I can't remember what Bill Wyman's exact age. But
that's right, because Bill Wyman did National Service, didn't he? So he must have been born, I guess, in the 30s.
That's a good point. Yes.
Yeah, he did.
So rock stars who did National Service. Bill Wyman, God.
Definitely. So anybody, because John Peel did National Service. He was born in about 38, I think. So if you were born in the 30s, you probably did.
Do you know, I never thought of it like that. There aren't many others, are there? Because that was the great break point that made the Beatles and the Stones and all those bands possible was the fact that they didn't have to do
National Service.
So at some point in the late 50s, they came to know that they weren't going to have to do National Service. Before then, it must have always been hovering. And of course, the other interesting age anomalies, Hank Marvin, only 78, a mere 78. You know, so Hank Marvin, same age as Mick Jagger. And, I mean, how old's Paul McCartney?
Yeah, Paul McCartney's born in 1942, so he's 78, isn't he? So same age.
Well, the Shadows started really young, as did loads of these groups, but the Shadows particularly started really young. I think Hank Marvin and Bruce Welch kind of left home in Newcastle or wherever they came from, somewhere in the northeast of England, and headed to London about the age of 15 and pretty much living in digs in Finsbury Park, you know what I mean, with their parents, not knowing and probably not desperately caring where they were either, you know. We're going to go and make it in that music business, in that London. And they were 15, 16 years old when they slowly came into the orbit of the Cliff Richard and the Shadows and all that stuff. It's extraordinary, really.
It's incredible.
And it's reflected in the fact that, you know, Hank Marvin, who was a big star in sort of 1960, is 3 years younger than Ian Hunter. It wasn't well known until the mid-70s. It's a strange thing, isn't it?
It's extraordinary. But there's certain people who started late, didn't they? Debbie Harry's one. So you knew that Debbie Harry had started late. In, you know, she'd been in various popular... You know, she had The Wind in the Willows, wasn't she?
And
I don't think she joined Blondie until she was... Oh, was it late 20s, early 30s? I don't know. So she's 75, but you kind of know she's going to be a bit older. Charlie Harper of the UK Subs, what a classic.
Remember,
he was a gnarled old bruiser at the time, wasn't he?
He was a hairdresser, wasn't he?
I think he must have been.
I think he was a hairdresser.
Yeah, he's 76.
76.
Andy Summers, of course, was older than, you know, the rest of the gang, wasn't he? Considerably. So he's 77.
Well, Andy Summers was had been a member of Zoot Money's Big Roll Band. And there's a wonderful picture, which you can find on the internet, of, I think it's Rod Stewart on this picture as well. I can't remember. It's taken in, like, Wardour Street or somewhere, in a kind of club doorway. In the mid-60s, and it's a black and white picture, and it's the most brilliant, you know, it conveys the mid-60s, that kind of beat boom R&B thing. And there's Andy Summers, probably about 16 years old.
Kind of schoolboy, a little tiny guy with a neat jacket and tie.
It's absolutely beautiful picture. So he's 77.
Yeah.
Susie Sue, 63. Which is probably younger than I would have said, actually.
Yeah, I would have thought so. Yeah.
I wonder if these people are lying about their age in the 60s. I wouldn't hear. Are they sneaking onto Wikipedia at dead of night and lopping a couple of years off them? Because you know what it's like when, you know, because it must be, if you're in punk rock, it must be like having been to school with all those people that you... You remember clearly that they were older than you or younger than you when they were 18, 19.
And then suddenly...
suddenly they get to their 50s and 60s. Hang on, they've gone into reverse. It doesn't seem right at all. So, anyway, you and I, we're at a mutual friend's the other day, Brent Hansen, and Brent's very big on hip radio, isn't he? Brent's always the person introducing you to new little sources of strange radio coming through the internet. I don't know if you found this in the past. And he was playing this thing. I said, what's this music? And he said, it's coming from NTS. Had you ever heard of NTS before?
I've never heard of it, no. And it's a kind of free station, isn't it, that puts together playlists in certain genres, is that right?
It's absolutely, well, yes, you are right. But it's also, I mean, I do urge people to go have a look at this. You can find it on the internet, or they've got their own app and so forth. NTS, it's not the snappiest name you've ever heard of, but it clearly, it kind of works. And they just do... They stream the playlists of hipster DJs. That's basically what it is. It's hipster radio from all over the world, but very carefully divided into various different strands. So you got one strand that's kind of jazzy. You got one strand that's kind of electronic. You got one strand that's slightly oldies. And then within that, subdivided again into things that just have kind of cool hip names. You know, half the name of the game here is, can you have a cool hip visual to go with your stream of music? And can you have a cool hip, you know, name for it? You know, like, Let's Get Yachts, or, you know, that kind of thing.
Is that what one of them's called?
Bumping on Sunset, you know.
What kind of music does Let's Get Yachts play?
I don't know. I haven't gone and looked. Empire of Signs, Getting Warmer, you know, Jarrow Sounder, you know. It's micro dosing. It's just absolutely amazing.
Brilliant.
And these pictures of the people who put together these streams. And you know, the traditional photograph of a DJ used to be somebody kind of like Alan Freeman or Tony Blackman, who was thumbs up, you know. They were holding a record.
Eager to please.
These people, anything but, you know, all the males have all got beards, just without exception, you know, the males have all got beards. And they're all looking at the camera as if to say, this is a serious business.
But also partly it's due to the fact that they don't speak, do they, very much?
I suppose
they don't really talk because, you know, Tony Blackburn, the whole point of Tony Blackburn is I'm a personality and what I've got to say is a key part of the equation.
I suppose so.
These guys, I mean, that thing we were listening to at Brent's was, there's no voice at all.
It's just
programmed music, which is terrific. There's no kind of interruption.
But it's really worth listening to because what they're doing is they're storing up this stuff and it's all just there. And so once you start, and the reason I wanted to mention it is you just get into this endless depth. You know, you can just spend your life going into this. And this is just one service. And it struck me when, in the week or whenever it is that the new director general of the BBC has taken over, you know, Tim Davey, and he's made a few statements, and I think one of the things he said is that they ought to do slightly less but better, which I think is probably a good objective, you know, because I think there's a great tendency for everybody to say we do loads of brilliant things. Well, yeah, you do loads of things, you know, not necessarily loads of brilliant things. But what you're competing against is just the kind of increased provision of the sheer amount of this stuff, radio, television, movies, whatever, that's just there absolutely all the time. And you can get lost in. And this is just one tiny, you know, part of that landscape. And I don't know if you've found this, but, you know, I wholeheartedly approve of the BBC and so forth and pay my licence fee dutifully. But when I add it up, how much do I listen to or watch? It's probably reducing all the time. It's bound to be reducing all the time just because there's more and
because
more.
Because there's stuff. So much else, isn't it? There's just so much else. Yeah, exactly.
A lot of it is that, you know.
Yeah.
No particular reflection on what they do. It's just all these other things coming along all the time. And you and me, we're quite an easy sell because we remember when there weren't loads of things. And so you pay the license fee or you did whatever, because that's the way you got things. Whereas, you know, to our children, they've grown up with more and more and more of this stuff. They don't look
Things that the BBC 4 Rock documentaries. Still very good, I think. And certain things when they came on were you know, a big deal. The Murdoch Dynasty thing recently, Mrs. America with Cate Blanchett. You know, Have I Got News for You? I think we're still addicted to when it's on. But I mean, as you say, there's just the number of things that are absolutely essential. And part of it's because we're not listening to as much news anymore. We used to listen to the news all the time on the BBC, but when the news is it's the kind of nature of the news it is at the moment.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's Brexit and it's H2S and stuff, you know, then H2S? HS2? What am I talking about?
H2S.
H2O.
NTS.
It's not terribly thrilling.
Right. Not terribly thrilling. There's a good name for a service. NTT.
This is a junction in the Word podcast. It separates that bit from this next bit.
Have you got a new book out, Dave?
Oh, yeah, funny you should ask that, Mark. Do you know, if you take part in our regular weekly quiz, which next week is not on Friday as it usually is, next week it's on Sunday, you could stand a chance to win an autographed copy of this, Mark. You'd be thrilled about that, wouldn't you?
I would be thrilled. Okay.
You'd be absolutely thrilled.
All my Christmases would have come up with.
Absolutely. That comes out in the middle of the month. And talking of other Patreon benefits, we recorded Word in Your Attic this week with the wonderful Jenny Colgan, didn't we? Jenny Colgan's
it was fantastic.
Extraordinary.
God, she was brilliant.
She has a ballroom in her house in Edinburgh as far
she
as
really
we
really does. She has a house with the floor of it actually looked like an ice rink, but it was marble, wasn't it? Am I right? She has a marble floored room. I mean, it's absolutely astonishing.
That'll be out amongst you as soon as. But if you've been a Patreon supporter, you would have been able to see that earlier, because what's happening now is that all our material is available earlier to Patreon supporters. And don't forget, to be a Patreon supporter means you get everything early, you don't miss anything, And also, you get to take part in things like the quiz that we talked about. But also, we offer you an opportunity to make your birthday, if you have a birthday coming soon, and everybody has a birthday coming soon, don't they? Really unique and memorable by actually allowing Mark Ellen and myself, by the miracle of digital communication,
to come to your home. And to do a special word in your attic with you.
With you.
With your, you've always, come on, admit it, you've always wanted to. You want to get your rare records out and impress your pals.
Absolutely. So if you want to know about all that stuff, just go to patreon.com/word in your ear to find out more details. Okay. Moving on. Did you see that hot news in the world of music is something Bob Dylan said in, 1966.
I know. This just in.
This is
brilliant, isn't it?
It's some interview he did. I don't know where he did it, but he was indulging in his bit of his favourite pastime, which is being rather slighting about other artists. He always likes that, doesn't he?
It's ramped up a bit, like he's really disparaged the Beatles. But actually, he's just a little bit quiet about two of their compositions, isn't he? Michelle. And yesterday. And he says there's a lot of smoothness there. And he said, if you go to the Library of Congress, you can find a lot better than that. There are millions of songs like Yesterday and Michelle written in Tin Pan Alley. So it is pretty disparaging, I suppose.
But you see, I think he's got a fair point. I don't know about millions, but I'm sure he's right that there are loads and loads of songs as good as Yesterday. In the kind of, the Great American Songbook. I don't think there's any doubt about that at all. What he's rather kind of sniffily responding to is the fact that what happened with the Beatles was that when they were so huge, that once they wrote anything slightly outside of their normal wheelhouse, people said, look at what they've done over there. You know what I mean? This is... Yesterday, well, isn't it Frank Sinatra said it was the greatest love? It's Frank Sinatra said that something by George Harrison.
He said something by George Harrison was.
Was the greatest love song of the last 50 years. No, it wasn't, Frank. It's just that, it was written by a bloke with long hair, and yet it was your way of saying something nice about a bloke with long hair.
And it makes you look good to associate yourself with the new guard. Yeah.
And so, yesterday... which always comes out, top in polls of most covered Beatles songs, doesn't it? It's not, I don't think it's all that extraordinary, you know what I mean? But it's a Paul McCartney solo effort with a really novel string arrangement by George Martin at the time that nobody else did that kind of thing at all. And it's nothing like as exceptional as, Paperback Writer or, stuff that they made as a group, don't you think? This is why
I do, but I also think that it's something to do with Dylan, because in 1966, Dylan was writing songs like scathing lyrics like Positively Fourth Street, and his idea of a love song at the time was Sad Eyed Lady of the Lowlands, So what he wrote was so much more kind of supercharged and poetic and complicated. He didn't write anything as direct as that, and therefore he wouldn't have been particularly persuaded by it. I mean, if you think of the songs he did write later on, like If Not For You, it's a really good example of the most simple, straightforward love song that I think he ever wrote. But, interesting pop fact, he co-wrote that with a member of the Beatles.
Oh, yes, he did.
Didn't he? I think. So, but otherwise, his songs, and Sarah too, Sarah's a fairly straightforward love song. But otherwise, there just tends to be dimensions to his writing that are just complicated and poetic, and he never writes anything that straightforward.
Yeah,
so that's probably what he might have been exercised about at the time.
Must be funny for Bob Dylan to roll out of bed in the year 2020 and turns on his Google alerts or whatever,
and discovers that he's hot news.
And goes, what have I only gone and done now?
Dylan trashes the Beatles.
1966.
Absolutely amazing.
It's absolutely extraordinary that you can still make news after all that time. Talking of anniversaries, you're saying this is the 30th anniversary of George Michael's most unfortunately named record in the history of popular music.
Oh, it is, yeah. Listen to That Prejudice, Volume 1. Which is, I just thought that was an interesting record because, A, the title, and B, the artwork. And
A, the title.
I mean, it is incredible because before that, he had Faith out, hadn't he? Which was an absolutely colossal seller.
Yeah.
And this is Without Prejudice. I mean, it did have its hits, and it has to date sold about 10 million copies, which I think is only half what Faith sold. But can you imagine what the record company must have thought when he went in and said, "That's the cover"? It's a picture of a load of people on Coney Island.
It's a beautiful picture. It's a beautiful picture. It's a Ouija picture, I think it is.
That's right. There's no mention of George Michael. There's no title. There's nothing.
Oh, there's not.
I don't think so.
No, you might be right. I think I bet. Yeah.
So, can you imagine how astonished they must have been by this idea that you were going to kind of shoot yourself commercially in the foot?
I've always had a slight problem with the words "Listen Without Prejudice," because the whole philosophy of the music business is getting people to listen with prejudice.
Precisely.
Prejudice in favour of things.
Yeah, because
like,
if you like
George Michael, it's not anybody, it's him. You know what I mean? That's the deal, you know.
The whole point of prejudice is you've become a fan and you're devoted to this person and you will follow. Prejudice is what makes you buy records by an artist that you like long after they've ceased to be any good, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because you're defending them. You know, you don't want them to be disappointing.
Yeah, so we're all in favour of prejudice as long as it's our prejudices. You know, we only have problems when it's somebody else's prejudice. But talking of strange behaviour by rock stars, I say Ian Brown out of the Stone Roses has suggested we ought to be not wearing masks and just going out there and defying no lockdown, no tests, no tracks, no masks, no vax. And then # research and destroy.
What does this mean?
What did you talk? I mean, the idea. Well, the idea that we're even talking about what Ian Brown has to say is kind of ridiculous. And John Squire has then felt moved to say, "Wear a mask, stay safe, look after yourself and others." And then # Morecambe or Wise, as if to suggest that you know that this is not company policy, whatever Ian Brown has decided. But I think Van Morrison, you know, tweeted something similar a couple of weeks ago. You know, I think they're going stir crazy. They've been too long at home. Their significant others are saying, why don't you get out of the house?
I'm quite sympathetic, really, because they have, and you know, well, we all have, but you know, but those, I mean, they should be out there playing, and they must be agonised about, you know, where it's all going to go, and they've done enough jigsaws, Dave, haven't they? They've baked all the sourdough bread that they want to bake. They've given up. They're now eating out of tins.
Do you think any of them have taught themselves a foreign language? Do you think?
No, that's the point. Have they learned Italian? Have they read Proust? Have they mastered the harp? Have they learned the harpsichord? No.
No sign of that.
They've done a lot of computer games and watching terrible old movies.
Talking of Ian Brown, I happened to catch on YouTube the other day because YouTube just, once you like something, it serves you up more of the same thing. I happened to watch a clip of the old Harry Enfield show. Boy, this is old, isn't it? Because this is when Perry goes off to Manchester and discovers Oasis.
Okay. Oh, yeah, it comes back converted.
Comes back converted.
Speaking fluent Mancunian. Yeah.
I'll leave it with our kid. All right, our kid. Sorted.
And yeah.
And then doing the Ian Brown walk or the Liam Gallagher walk or whatever it is, wearing a sheepskin coat with a painted-on beard or moustache,
that's right.
He's absolutely
hilarious.
It's genuinely funny. Kevin the Teenager, the whole strand. It's one of those things that never gets old, it seems to me. You know what I mean? You go and watch it years later, long after your own kids cease being teenagers. It's still very, very funny.
And the genius is that you can be horrible to your own parents, but you're really respectful to other people, aren't you?
Absolutely.
And if somebody's horrible about your parents, if you're horrible about your parents, and then one of your mates says you're absolutely right, you go, "That's my mum you're talking about." You become really defensive.
Absolutely.
I know.
She goes, yes, when Kevin's mum talks to Perry, she always goes, "How are you, Perry?" He goes, "I'm fine, Mrs. Patterson."
Mrs. Patterson, with that very sort of squeaky high voice. I know. I'm nervous.
It's absolutely brilliant. So do you know what I'm doing after this? I'm doing a down the line filmed.
Oh, the Elvis Presley thing.
TV interview.
Yeah.
But I just have to tell people, because the technicalities of this are absolutely fascinating. They got in touch with me a few weeks ago, and they're making a documentary, and they want talking heads. You know, we've all done that loads of times, you know. And normally what happens in the talking head game is they invite you to some ritzy hotel somewhere where they've set up a nice background, and they're rowing in loads of people one after the other at half an hour intervals to pontificate and, you know, and add platitudes, which they can then just snip in amongst the musical.
It's the easiest form of broadcasting imaginable. They just sit back and you come to them.
Yeah.
No, I've done those. But they obviously can't do that anymore.
Or they come to your house. And when they come to your house, they always say, well, we won't be there long. And you think, no, you will. You'll be there ages. And we won't cause much disruption. No, yes, you will. You want to knock down a wall.
Can we take that wall down? That's right, yeah. That kind of thing. The ceiling should be higher.
Well, it's very different in this current situation because they can't do that, obviously. So they said, we're going to send you the equipment. And I'm trying to find this little box here. They sent me, here we go. They sent me this. I got this through a courier. So in there, which is around about the size of a camera, isn't it? In there was a mobile phone, a very nice little mobile phone, a little tripod, and some tiny microphones. And basically, you set up the mobile phone on your Wi-Fi. They have installed a little bit of software on it. You set it up on the tripod over there, and then they can see you 200 miles away perfectly. The director, the cameraman, or whatever can sit there. They can adjust the shot, the aperture, the lighting, all that kind of stuff. They can do everything they need to do. You record your output, your audio output locally, and email it to them. They put it together. You never even meet them. It's absolutely astonishing.
It's astonishing, isn't it?
I couldn't believe this. You know, I said, you appear to have sent me a phone. They said, yeah, it's a phone. I said, what? She said, it's a phone with a really good camera in it. So it's the idea you can make stuff for broadcast quality now on HD, presumably, from a telephone. It's absolutely amazing. You know, when you still see TV crews, they turned up. They got more equipment than Hitchcock would have had in 1945 or something, you know. Whereas suddenly, and I'd be saying,
if you're in a TV crew, you know, wouldn't you be slightly perturbed by that and think that actually, you know, as we've discovered with lockdown, that there's loads of things that you don't need anymore and just can be done far more efficiently with.
It is just amazing, as we've said more than once during this time. Not that this stuff works, but that it works so well.
Yeah.
Is absolutely amazing. You know, I was listening to a podcast the other day saying, even back in, you know, certainly back in the 70s and 60s, but even back in the 80s, most things didn't work. You know, you bought them, they broke. They took a lot of assembly, or they took a lot of getting going. That doesn't really apply anymore, does it? You get a mobile phone straight out of its box, turn it on, and it's doing what they say it's going to do. It's absolutely astonishing.
And so they've sent that to people all over the world, everybody involved in this Presley thing.
They're sending that to kind of 80-year-olds and 90-year-olds, contemporaries of Elvis Presley, in Arkansas.
Who are capable of assembling
them. And they just talk them through it on Zoom. You know, it may take a little bit longer in some cases, but, you know, it's the fact that they can do it is pretty astonishing.
This is absolutely amazing.
So I think that's another case of, you know, I feel it's really important in this podcast that we should regularly have one spot where we applaud something about the modern world.
Absolutely. Rather than sitting there grumbling. Hurrah!
I think a good thing
has happened.
That's absolutely astonishing. Talking of good things that has happened, the sun's come out, Mark.
Has come out this end too. Very exciting.
I'm going out to play. Bye-bye.
This podcast was brought to you by The Word.